Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, October the 5th. As we like to do from time to time, we'll be checking with our good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. We're going to take a look at the midterms coming up in roughly 30 days, 32 days, something like that. And, of course, the big story and what has become now the big issue, really, in these midterms is what we've just seen in the U.S. Senate, and that is the confirmation, which will be official tomorrow, of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, as a justice to the Supreme Court. And over the last couple of weeks, we have seen, I believe, a little earthquake politically in the country. And we're going to get into that with Barry in just a minute. We're also going to look at maybe some of the races. We'll get some perspective from Barry and what races he is following. I thought it was very interesting this week that there is now a new competitive race, and that's in New Jersey, where it appears that Senator Menendez may be in trouble. I don't know enough about it, but that appears to be the implication of some new polling. Let me say hello to Barry. How are you, Barry?
I'm good. It's nice to talk to you.
Well, as always, and we're going to do just a quick 30-second baseball note here. The Yankees are trailing 5-2 in the bottom of the sixth. It doesn't seem that this is going to be their night, but it's a five-game series. They'll get another crack at it tomorrow night. But they're playing the Red Sox, and that's always a great rivalry. But I will take you back, if you remember this. I certainly don't, but if you remember this, perhaps as a great Yankee fan, this was the day that 1953, when the Yankees won their fifth World Series in a row, when they beat the Dodgers. So that was a great accomplishment. No other team has ever done that before. Five in a row, Barry.
That's true. Those were my teenage years when I was a young Yankee fan, so it was exciting. We had some dry times soon thereafter, and then the Yankees came back, and now they're still a great team. The Yankees won 2 out of 3 from Boston at the end of the season. It's tough. Boston has home turf, and Boston's a great team.
Sure.
The Yankees are a very good team. They broke the all-time record, major league record, for home runs by a team. They actually had more than 20 home runs in all nine batting positions, something no one's ever done before. It was a very impressive team in many ways. There was some erratic moments for some of their players. Louis Severino had a fantastic beginning and a slow ending, and then came back at the end. Mr. Hop did not last very long tonight. He was doing very well up until this point for the Yankees. It's going to be a tough series. I still think the Red Sox are the favorite, the Yankees never give up. Neither team does. It's a nine-inning game when it's the Red Sox versus the Yankees.
That's right.
Red Sox
should be a great series.
So it'll be a great series, and we already in the playoff, the wild card, we had both Judge and Stanton hitting home runs, the two great home run hitters of the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Although they didn't have as many this year as they had last year, and they still broke the record. So that's just a testimony to the power of the whole Yankee team. I mean, they had nine or ten players hitting more than 20 home runs.
No, it's an absolutely great team, and it's a shame they cannot play in the World Series, play each other in the World Series, but we know the reason why that's not possible. But these, I think, in many ways, are the two best teams. I think, well, maybe two of the three. I think Houston is pretty good, too, but certainly two of the best teams in baseball. Well, let's talk a little bit about the politics. Today was an important date for Judge Kavanaugh. Tomorrow, it looks like he will be officially confirmed, and he'll be joining the Supreme Court shortly after that. I've been watching this thing here for the last two or three weeks, and it's just been appalling to watch. The accusations, the lack of respect for Judge Kavanaugh, the accusations, even the media did not behave, I think, at times. I should say some people in the media, not the media, some people in the media did not behave very responsibly. And it made me angry. And I guess, Barry, it made a lot of people angry, too, because there seems to be some awakening of the Republican elephant, if I could put it that way, for these elections. So let me begin by asking you for your reaction to the last couple of weeks and the speech today by Senator Collins. I thought it was a fantastic speech, Barry. So your reaction and the reaction to the speech, Barry.
Well, first of all, I did not watch the hearings, because mm-hmm. it was so, to use a word that was degraded during the presidential campaign, it was so deplorable. But it was, it really was a disintegration of the of a process that's very important in America, which is the advise and consent function of the Senate, the confirmation of Supreme Court and judge appointments and members of cabinet and. It's an important function, and it has had its ups and downs in history. I don't think it would be fair to say this is the only time. But we've had a basic, since Judge Bork, maybe even since Haynesworth and Carswell, appointed by President Nixon, who went down, but certainly since Judge Bork. And on both sides have degraded the process, and but this was a new low. There's two separate issues. One was the issue of the character of Judge Kavanaugh, which I believe was besmirched unfairly and wrongly. But there was also the issue of what happens, what has happened, abuse of women, which is a serious issue and which we all must respect and take seriously. The problem is the two got conflated in a way that was not necessary. I mean, what we saw here was that the basic American principle, and it is as basic as there is any, that you're innocent until proven guilty, was turned on its head. And suddenly you were guilty until proven innocent, which was impossible anyway, because it was was not a trial. It was a question of emotional testimony. I'm not going to say what's true and what's not, because I don't know, and nobody does, and nobody will in the end, ultimately. But there, it's the idea that one party had to go back into the teenage years of a candidate in his pre-adult years to find something to attempt to disqualify him from taking a position which was a purely political act. The opposition to Judge Kavanaugh is political. They employed issues that were beyond political, and they went out seeking, and they kept constantly. After the first one, we saw examples of they went into the judge's wife. I mean, it was unbelievable. And what happened was, already the Democratic base is roused, and they're roused by their antipathy to President Trump. Perfectly understandable. I don't agree with it, but it's certainly a fair thing in American politics. You can agree or disagree with the president and the opposition. And that's fair play. So the Democrats, who had been trying to sort of undo the 2016 election for 2 years, and are threatening, if they win the House of Representatives, to impeach the president, which is a political mistake of a colossal size. They are already roused, and I believe that we saw their turnout in the primaries, and I think it's fair to say that Democrats will turn out and vote in the November election this year in a very large number. What was not happening, clearly indicated by the primaries, was that although Republicans were turning out in red states, there was a sense that the Democrats had the initiative. They were on the offense. And the Republicans seemed, they were pleased. Many, many Republicans didn't particularly like the president's verbal style, but they certainly liked what he was doing. But they were sort of taking it for granted and not realizing what was at stake. And I think there was a lot of talk of a blue wave coming. I, of course, argued that there was contradictory evidence. There were, in blue states, there was evidence of a blue wave. In red states, there was evidence of no blue wave, in fact, a red surge. And there was contradictory evidence. But I always admitted, if you recall, on my website and my articles, and in my conversations with you, Silvio, on this show, I always admit the possibility of a blue wave or a blue, certainly Democratic victory. Certainly, the Democrats were seemed to be have a good chance to win back the House of Representatives, although I thought the chance of winning the Senate was very, very low. So that was what was happening until the appointment of Judge Kavanaugh and the confirmation hearings. And then the Democrats, I believe, in my opinion, overplayed their hand. They decided, even though they had so many incumbent Democratic senators in states which had been carried by President Trump by a large margin, and he was still popular and still going out in those states and having rallies like he did yesterday in Minnesota, which drew enormous crowds. And in spite of that, and in spite of the fact they didn't have the vote, he was an apparently strong candidate to fill the seat on the Supreme Court, they decided to throw it all into the fire and to oppose him no matter what. And in going to such lengths that made a spectacle of themselves in front of the American people, including their own voters to some extent, although I think their base, of course, has cheered them on. And in fact, really, I think someone like Chuck Schumer, who's a very smart guy, was really pushed by his own party base into this. They have, in fact, done what the Republicans couldn't do for themselves, which is motivate them to turn out and vote in November. And I think that has happened. And by the way, so the vote has not taken place, and I take nothing for granted. There's always something at the last minute here. So until the gavel sounds tomorrow and the president of the Senate declares Judge Kavanaugh confirmed, I'm not counting any chickens, but it looks that way. But with that seemingly apparent, the Democrats have announced that if they win the House, they will impeach Judge Kavanaugh. I mean, what more self harming, suicidal thing could you do than that?
Right.
Now that will so now, even though they, let's say Judge Kavanaugh is confirmed, well, that will relax a little bit. But now they have threatened to impeach. So now all those voters who are upset by the way Judge Kavanaugh was treated, and many of them are independents, and some of them even are Democrats, are now going to say, oh, wait a minute, we can't let up anymore, because if we don't lose the House, they're going to try and impeach him. They'll never convict him. As an impeachment of the president won't happen. But they'll try. And, of course, we saw what happened when the Republicans did that to Bill Clinton. Now, Bill Clinton did perjure himself on an issue. But I think the country fairly agreed that it was not an impeachable and convictable offense to remove him from the presidency. The Republicans persisted, however, came up short in the Senate, and then there was a reaction which made Bill Clinton more popular at the end of his presidency than he was at the beginning, or certainly in the middle. So that should be instructive to the Democrats. That impeaching, Richard Nixon would have been impeached and convicted, I believe, but that was a serious offense. Those were serious political events involving the misuse of the presidency. There are no issues here in the presidency of Donald Trump. There's a whole bunch of issues that seem to exist before the fact when he was a businessman and which have nothing to do with his presidency, or very little to do. The Democrats are insisting they're going to do all these this impeachment, and that's going to do is keep the intensity high for Republicans to turn out, and I think it could easily cost them. Not only will this now result in net gains, I don't know how many, for the Republicans in their Senate, so instead of 51-49, they could be 52, 53, 54, 55, even 56 Republican senators. But I think it could cost them the chance to win back the House. They only need 23 net, but they're going to lose a couple of seats. They're going to lose one for sure in Minnesota, maybe two, and maybe one or two or three elsewhere. So they're going to have to win about 28 seats from Republicans. But that's doable.
That's right.
There are some pundits who are saying there are 60 vulnerable Republicans. Well, that's I think a lot of wishful thinking and sort of magic. But under the right circumstances, if the Democrats hadn't misplayed this hand in the confirmation process and threatened things like impeachment. They might not have only won back the House, but won it by five or six or seven seats. I don't think that's likely now. I mean, anything's possible.
Right.
Hear me say never on your show or anything I write.
Yeah. Well, you've always been very consistent. You've always been very consistent on that anything could happen.
Right.
You're just seeing things on the day.
Even with President. The election in 2016 on your show before the election, I said I thought you were even more predicting than I was. I said it looked like Donald Trump was going to win, but anything could happen.
That's right. Let me ask you a couple of questions about this impeachment talk that you're bringing up, because it kind of ties into a question I wanted to ask you, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll get into maybe some Senate races that you're following, but. The mistake I think the Democrats made in focusing and talking so much about impeachment, and now talking about impeaching a justice of the Supreme Court, in a sense saying all we're going to do if you put us back in charge of the House, all we're going to do is impeach people. I think what they're missing is an opportunity to talk to voters in the country who are more interested to hear about the economy and other things. Because if you're talking about impeachment, the people you're talking to are already going to vote for you. You're not really picking up any new voters when you're talking about impeachment. And as you said, you're turning off the other voters who are now have a reason to turn out. But the people in the middle who they had to win to pick up all those seats in the middle of the country, in the House and potentially in the Senate, those people don't want to hear about impeachment. It's not something they're focusing on. Impeachment or Russia, and now impeachment of a justice. So I think it's just bad strategy in many ways that it makes you wonder. But I mean, it makes you wonder, Barry, where are they? Who's the quarterback in this team? because they're certainly calling some pretty bad plays, if I could use a baseball analogy.
Well, we have we forgot in all this confirmation stuff that we also had another issue that was hurting the Democrats nationally, which was their jolt to the left in some areas, some cases, especially in so-called blue states, New York, California. And we had an example here in two examples in Minnesota, including the Keith Ellison debacle, which is continuing and which may cost the Democrats who call themselves DFLers here, Democratic Farmer Laborites, may cost them what was going to be a good year. They may go down because they have, again, forget about the charges of against Ellison, but even his successor, the woman who's going to succeed him, who won the primary, are really talking about issues on the far left. I mean, they're talking about single-payer health care, Medicare for all, free college tuition, a borderless country, no illegal immigrants, anyone can come in without restraint, without being checked out. These are issues that appeal to a small number of base voters, and they're excited about it.
Right.
But they do not appeal even to the larger group of their own party, much less independents and Republicans. So they already were turning people away. Early in the campaign, they ran some centrist candidates, and one of them actually won a House seat in Pennsylvania, I believe.
Yes, they did. He did.
And in other races, they weren't winning, but they were getting close because they were running these candidates who were moderates, liberals, and representing a liberal point of view, but not far off the center, so far off the center that they couldn't appeal especially to independent voters. Well, they have allowed this wing of the party, the Bernie Sanders, Warren wing, and Maxine Waters wing, which are representing certainly points of view that are not close to the political center, and which represent views which are quite radical, frankly.
That's right.
Relatively speaking. And when Republicans on the right started arguing with radical views on the right, they were rejected, and rightly so.
That's right.
And that's what's going to happen here. So you have So what we have here is we have a party which was on the brink of the historic gains in a midterm election of picking up House seats, possibly winning the House, and actually keeping the Senate, Republican Senate majority down very low, maybe even possibly winning back, although that's really mathematically very hard to do, but possibly.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw it all, they seem to have thrown it all away by their own hand. The Republicans didn't do anything. The Republicans, frankly, didn't have the smarts enough or the will to do it. But the Democrats did it by their own hand. And now we don't know what the result will be. And there's still four weeks to go. I still think we can't forget who's got the bully pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
And what did Donald Trump do? He got himself a NAFTA deal.
That's right.
His numbers, he's now at 50, the Rasmussen has it at 51-48 positive, three plus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even Obama was nowhere close to this
right.
at this time.
No, and clearly the economy is doing very well. We had some amazing numbers today about jobless claims and 3.7% unemployment. So a lot of things are going right. But you're right. I mean, the Democrats are helping, I think, the Republicans with all this talk about impeachment, and certainly the behavior of the Democrats toward Judge Kavanaugh, I believe, has turned off a lot of women in the country.
And
who
speaking
may not
of women, you mentioned
can
earlier.
Can I take a break? Let's take a little break, and then when we
let
come
me
back,
just quickly
we'll continue.
Say before you
yeah,
do,
go ahead. Go ahead.
You mentioned it, and I think she deserves to be. Susan Collins gave one of
yes.
the great speeches in the Senate. She clearly gave this, along with Judge Kavanaugh's defense speech, which turned things around.
Mm-hmm.
Susan Collins demolished the anti-Kavanaugh argument,
mm-hmm.
demolished it in an eloquent, well thought out, brilliant speech that I think will be long remembered.
And yes,
all
I
credit
agree.
To her.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I thought it was one of the best, and I had a chance to watch it. I had an opportunity today to watch it because I was between meetings, and I had a chance to actually watch it. And I thought it was so – I didn't know what to expect, to be honest with you. I had never actually heard her speak before, and I was afraid that she was going to vote against him. I don't know why, but I felt that way. But she gave just an absolutely wonderful speech. I don't think – I mean, to me, it was, as you say, one of the best speeches that I have ever heard from a senator. And I think it had a huge impact on the country. I really do, because I bet a lot of people were watching as well. We're going to take a little break. We'll get back to our friend Barry. But before we do that, I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Guedes.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpies. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information right under the show description. You'll see a link to his website, and you can click on that and update yourself on his schedule here in the Dallas area. Let's get back to our friend Barry Castleman. In the first segment, we were talking about what happened today. Of course, more coming tomorrow, Saturday, regarding the official confirmation of Justice Kavanaugh. But we were also talking about potentially some pieces moving on the map because of Kavanaugh, the reawakening, if you will, or the awakening of the Republican side. Seems like Republicans are very engaged right about now, and I can see this on my own personal level, talking to friends and all of that. Everybody's very outraged by what is done to the judge. So, Barry, looking at I know you follow these things very closely, but tell me some of the races that you're looking at, particularly some of the Senate races that you're looking at, and maybe potential surprises one way or the other for the U.S. Senate. So just kind of give us a sense of what you're seeing and what you see happening out there. We've got about 35 days before the election. I know you don't like to do predictions, so just kind of give us a sense of what
you're
seeing.
Well, let me go over the close races in the Senate,
sure,
which I'm following much closer because there's so many allegedly competitive House races. I think the pundits have listed more than there really are, but needless to say, I'm following the Senate races much more closely. There's about 12 or 13 of them. There are four races that the media has said are competitive on the revolving Republican incumbents. One of them, and this one you know very well, Silvio, and you have pointed out how unlikely it really is the re-election of Senator Ted Cruz. There's this fellow running against him, Beto O'Rourke, who's been given sort of star status, but I think the latest poll has him 9 points behind. In the primary, there was almost twice as many votes for Cruz, even though he didn't have any real competition, than the Democrat. The governor of Texas, a Republican, is extremely popular. Texas is not. There may be a House race or two in which this isn't true, but for the most part, Texas is not a food for Democratic gains. So I don't consider that as competitive a race as most of the others. Tennessee was considered close, but Martha Blackburn the congresswoman, the Republican congresswoman, now has a 5-point lead in the latest poll over the former Democratic and popular governor, Phil Bredesen. And I think that probably Tennessee is a pretty red state, so I think that's probably going to go Republican, especially now, under the present circumstances that we've discussed earlier. So that leaves Arizona and Nevada. I think those are very close races. I think the Democrats in both cases are serious candidates. Kristen Sinema is a congresswoman, as is her opponent, Martha McSally. One is a Democrat, one is a Republican. That's going to be a very close race. McSally is a very impressive candidate, but and Sinema is running as a, even though she was a sort of a lefty populist 20 years ago, she's now running as a sort of a moderate Democrat, which she has to do in Arizona. Arizona is a moderate state. It will be very close. I'm making no predictions. In Nevada, the incumbent, Dean Heller, has a slight lead over his opponent, the Secretary of State, a woman who is a serious candidate. That race is very close, too close to call. It's, both of those are toss-ups. We'll see whether the circumstances of today and tomorrow in the confirmation hearings are will play a role of helping those two candidates. But those are two possible pickups, and I'm not making a prediction. Now we're going to the Democratic seats. You cited one of the ones that I picked out a couple months ago when no one else was talking about it. But I spotted it because I knew that the New Jersey incumbent Senator Bob Menendez was weak based on the fact that he had just gone through a trial that ended in a hung jury, and the allegations of corruption were so manifest that he was not really material for a safe Senate seat, as most of the pundits predicted. And it turned out that the main reason they were calling him a safe seat was because he didn't have an opponent. Well, he did get an opponent, and he got a very good opponent, Bob Hougan, a successful businessman who is spending his own money and has been on the attack. And that race went from double-digit lead for Menendez to a virtual tie. And, in fact, I understand one of the major pundits has already, hasn't been published yet, is moving that to towards the Republican. That could be an upset. That would be an upset and a pickup that wasn't even counted at the start of the season. Now let's go to the places where there were very likely. I think if Joe Manchin follows through tomorrow, as he said he did, and consistent with his vote on the cloture today, he will be very difficult to beat. The polling showed that his vote on Kavanaugh was basically the basic issue in that race, because he is a former governor, very popular. He very conservative Democrat, votes with the president half the time. His opponent is the current attorney general, and the race was the polling showed that Manchin, if he confirmed Kavanaugh, he wins by double digits. If he did not, it's a tie, or he could even lose. So Manchin has made it very clear that he's indicated he's going to vote for Kavanaugh, and I think, frankly, it will be very hard to defeat him in November. Donnelly, the incumbent Democratic senator in Indiana, is being opposed by a businessman, Mr. Braun. He has had a slight lead, but he has already indicated he is going to vote against Kavanaugh in a state which the president carried by a large margin, and which I believe the indication is that Mr. Kavanaugh is the most voters want Mr. Kavanaugh to be confirmed. So that's a political mistake. Mr. Donnelly is. Some people think that he fears more backlash from his own base. I don't think that makes sense in a state where Donald Trump carried it by double digits.
But Barry, one quick question about Indiana. Isn't there a third party there too?
There is, and that hurts Braun a bit. It's
right,
a
that's
libertarian
what I'm thinking. Yeah. Right, exactly.
But nevertheless, I think that it was. I don't understand Mr. Donnelly's. I mean, I understand the reasoning that he made, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think that's a. I'm not going to make a prediction, but that's a very vulnerable seat. In North Dakota, Heidi Heitkamp is. I'm moving into almost safe Republican. She is opposed by Congressman Kramer, who also runs statewide, so is equally well known as she is. And she's 12. Even before she announced her vote for against Kavanaugh, she was 12 points behind. So I think what she's done is thrown in the towel, realizing that she's already thinking about her career after the Senate. Because I don't think I think that's pretty close to a safe Republican seat in November. Montana, the incumbent Democrat Tester, has announced he's going to vote against Kavanaugh. That state was carried by large double digits by the president, who has visited the state. Mr. Rosendale, Matt Rosendale, is running a very strong campaign. I just got a press release from him. He's having a rally tomorrow with prominent Republicans in the state, a Republican state, by the way, to call for the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh, and there Mr. Tester will be voting against him. You do the math, you make it up. I think it's a close race. Tester has always survived up till now, so I don't underestimate him. But again, I think he's making a political, I think he and so many of his colleagues have made a political miscalculation in the Kavanaugh case. In Missouri, Mr. Hawley has pulled ahead, not by a lot, and Ms. McCaskill has shown a certain resilience, but I think maybe her number is up this year. She, of course, is going to vote against Kavanaugh. She made it clear she was, from the outset, she was unimpressed by the fact that Missouri voters clearly wanted him confirmed. And she's a pretty much of a liberal candidate in a state which is in which Mr. Hawley, the Attorney General, who is a very, very good opponent, is showing himself to be a strong candidate. That's another toss-up. I'm not going to make a prediction. The only place I'm going to make a prediction is North Dakota, and even then it's not a certainty. But these are races where the Republicans have a very good chance to make a pickup. Then you have Minnesota, another race that was not expected to be in fact, there wasn't expected to be a race. The one senator who's up for re-election, Amy Klobuchar, will win handily. She has a weak opponent, and she'll win in a very by a very large margin. When Al Franken had to resign, again by his own party, forced the issue, not the Republicans, over abuse charges, or whatever the charges were, they were allegations. The governor appointed his lieutenant governor, Tina Smith, to be the appointed senator. She's a very smart lady, smart woman. She's a, but she's not a very good candidate. And her opponent, the state senator Corinne Housley, is a fantastic candidate, very outgoing. But the race in the polling, Tina Smith has a small lead. Neither candidate is particularly well known, but Tina Smith is perhaps even less well known. Corinne Housley, although she's not making it the central part of her campaign, happens to be married to one of the legends of professional hockey, and so her name is well known. She's a very, very, as I said, a very outgoing person. That is a toss-up. And the big advantage that Tina Smith has is she's got twice as much money, which is important in a statewide race, and she'll get some more money from the national folks. So the only thing that's holding Corinne Housley back so far is the fact that her available cash is still behind Tina Smith. If she does get an infusion of cash, I think the race would be absolutely too close to call. In any event, it's definitely a potential pickup.
Now, in all of these, Barry, one before you get to Florida, I wanted to ask you a question, because in all of, well, maybe this applies to Florida too. It's really a question of turnout when you get that close, right? I mean, if it's 2 points here, 2 points there, it's all about turnout. And I feel a lot better about a Republican turnout now than I did before.
Right, and it's absolutely true. And in Minnesota, it's key. The president yesterday was in Rochester, Minnesota, to campaign for two House candidates, one pickup, one incumbent, and for Corinne Housley. And Corinne Housley's making the point that Tina Smith, who's adamant about voting against Kavanaugh, is supporting Keith Ellison, who has also allegations made against him and not proven, but nevertheless even more serious and more recent, and yet she's supporting him, accepting his point of view without question, and yet being so hard on. So the hypocrisy of it is a strong issue here in Minnesota, and also is faced by all the other Democratic statewide candidates. Now, going to Florida, that's a tough race. That's a close race. The governor, who was popularly elected, then was unpopular, now he's popular again, has made important strides, and you know more about this than I do, but has made a strong appeal to the Puerto Rican and Cuban American community, especially the older Cuban Americans who are Republicans. But the Puerto Rican community has traditionally a Democratic voters, but he's been over there in Puerto Rico and been very adamant in his support of the issues that face them, and he's going to make serious inroads. And the incumbent, Mr. Nelson, is old and tired, and he's managed to get by, but he's not a particularly distinguished senator, and that race is, again, too close to call. They're within 1 or 2 points of each other. I don't think the Kavanaugh issue is as key to the election in Florida as it is in places like Montana, North Dakota, Indiana, or even Missouri. But it could play a role. Nelson will vote against Kavanaugh. The president is, we also have a very strong, or big governor's race between a Bernie Sanders liberal and a congressman who is a strong supporter of the president. So that's a real toss-up state, bearing close attention, and could be, if in fact the point that you have and I have both made, that the Republican vote is now invigorated, could go to the Republicans at the end. And one of the things I've pointed out in all of these races, the polling, I say, is quite flawed, because the polling traditionally undermeasures conservative and Republican voters who don't particularly like to respond to polls and don't trust them. And one of the things we see, and I've illustrated it in my writing in Minnesota, was that the polls here, the major polls, break down, in addition to everything else, they break down who the party affiliation of their voters is. So in Minnesota, they have Corinne Housley 4 points ahead of Tina Smith. I mean, four points ahead of Corinne Housley. Tina Smith 4 points ahead of Corinne Housley. But their poll is 37% Democrat, 31% Republican, and 30% Independent. Well, that's a completely arbitrary prediction of the turnout. What happens if the Republican turnout is even or even slightly behind the AFL? Well, then those numbers don't mean anything.
Right, exactly.
That's how the pollsters distort things.
That's right.
Whether they do it deliberately
or
not, not even the question. The question is they are distorted. And as I've pointed out, at the end of the campaigns, the pollsters become very serious because they know that if they're way off, their credibility will be shot. So then the pollsters get, shall we say, more honest in their polling and their likely voters.
Well, you begin to see likely voters, don't you?
Right,
you're seeing likely voters, right?
Likely voters. And we're seeing
more polls with likely voters.
All the polls are tightening. In fact, some are reversing. Democrats are not increasing their leads in very many races, maybe one or two, but not very many. And then only in blue states.
That's right. Well, let me say, you know, we're going to talk again in a couple of weeks to take a look at this Kavanaugh effect a couple of weeks later, because I think you make some amazing points about all this talk about impeachment of a Justice Kavanaugh is insane. I mean, all it does is it keeps the fire going. But I personally, and I'll make a prediction, I think that, the Democrats are about as energized as they can be. And I think you said this before, as energized as they can be. In other words, they're running about as high as they can run right now. And the Republicans are just getting going. And you can see, you know, there's a potential here, it seems to me, for the Republican turnout to exceed the Democrat turnout because of Kavanaugh. And if that were to happen, you can throw all the polls away, because then the results are going to be based on real turnout, not on polling data. And here in Texas, we had a situation here in Texas, in South Texas, where a gentleman by the name of Pete Flores, who was not a businessman, not a politician, in fact, he's a businessman, a rancher, he just picked up a seat in South Texas that had been Democrat for 139 years. So, I mean, how do you explain that in an area, in a Senate district in South Texas where the Democrats have dominated for 139 years? Where was the Democrat wave? It certainly wasn't in that election. So anyway, I don't want to make, you know, crazy predictions, but I will say that I do think the Republicans are gaining. Whether they're gaining enough to pass the Democrats, I guess time will tell. But I feel that Republicans are energized, Barry. That's just my last thought for the evening. Your last thought, please.
My last thought is that the election, and I wrote this in my piece, has been nationalized by President Trump and the Republicans. So that if the election were local, based on local issues, the Democrats had the advantage and could have even had a bit of a wave.
Mm-hmm.
But the danger was for them for the election to be nationalized, and nationalized on issues that favor the president and the Republican Party. And that's what the radical Bernie Sanders policies, issues, factor, and the Kavanaugh factor have done. And that's what and the other issue is, and I've made this point, the biggest issue of all in 2018 is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He's the motivator for the Democrats who don't like him. They really don't like him. But he's also the motivator for the Republicans who, whether they like everything he says, love what he's done and what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about Donald Trump. It's a nationalized election, which on paper is an advantage for the Republicans. It may not turn out that way, but then again, the president has the bully pulpit. In 2010, in the first midterm, Barack Obama had the bully pulpit, and it didn't stop the Republicans from having a wave election. Now Donald Trump has the bully pulpit. Will he be able to change the pattern of history? I don't know.
We're going to find out in about 35 days, but what I would like to know is let's you and I get together in a couple of weeks and see where things are. As we get closer to the election. But I do see a Republican, I see some Republican anger, you know, out there. And people sometimes have to be angry to get out and vote. But the one thing Kavanaugh has done, the whole incident with Kavanaugh has done, is that it has united Republicans. You know, even Eric Johnson, who I think that's his name, Eric Erickson, who had was as anti-Trump as anybody, now says he's supporting Trump in 2020 because of this Kavanaugh thing. So it has united Republicans in a way that I have not seen, frankly, for quite some time, Barry. But that's our last thought for tonight. You and I got a date in a couple of weeks, and we'll pick up all of this and see where everything stands. In the meantime, keep writing your wonderful stuff at Urgent Agenda. I mean, at the Prairie Editor. You're doing an absolutely wonderful stuff.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
Thank you so much. Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor up in Minnesota. Always enjoy chatting with him and reading the Prairie Editor. If you're not reading the Prairie Editor, get yourself subscribed to the Prairie Editor. It is one of the best analyses of political campaigns and that are out there. I just absolutely love getting the updates, and you get them about two or three times, maybe two times a week or so. You get an update. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas.